Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music. It's a Tuesday edition here on Zero Block 30, and today we have six rounds in the magazine. Round number one, the president is at sick call for a while. Does he get a light duty chit? We're going to talk about the ramifications of the commander-in-chief being extremely ill, but we're just going to speculate, and if we get anything wrong, please contact Hope Sec, as always. Round number two, mail order bride? More like mail order bribes. Obstruction of justice? Wrongfully using your position for influence? No, it's not another round about the president, folks. It's about a former soldier who's been setting up sham marriages, as if junior troops needed the help with that. Round number three, somebody ended up with a huge dumper in their pants, and it was captured on TikTok. A guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier nearly had his I wish I a motherfucker would moment. Round number four, over the weekend I watched a show about surviving World War II. I don't normally get triggered about military shows. This one, big exception. I was sitting there on my mega chair fucking stewing. It took everything I had to save it for the show and not just anger tweet over and over again for a show that came out probably 4 years ago. I was sitting there by my lonesome, just absolutely angry. Round number five, hold on to your dicks. There's a shortage of Hot Pockets on military bases. We're going to tell you why, and we're going to have a little barracks meal snake draft. So stick around for that. And finally, round number six, our friends that started BattleBox stopped by the show to talk to me and Kate about how they got started with BattleBox, their new show, Southern Survival on Netflix. It's a nice little interview. Stick around for that. All of that today is going to be brought to you by our good friends at Rocky Boots. If you need to survive out there in the wonderful wilderness of Louisiana, make sure you're throwing on your Rocky Boots. Or if you're at Yuma or if you're at Pendleton. Kate, did you used to do the Reaper for fun?
Any Saturday morning. You know me. Crack of dawn. Just scooting up that hill. Just swippity beep beep beep. Oh, yeah.
I know Cons, every time he took leave while he was on active duty, would go out to that very famous hill from... what's that show about Band of Brothers, that he would go up that hill and run up that hill in his Rocky boots every weekend that he was on leave during the military. Yeah, that was a nice little moment. And Kyle used to be a big Mount Whitney guy, right, Kyle?
Huge. Hey, Mount
where I was stationed on Pendleton, the Reaper was in our backyard. It was a delight.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Not really.
That might be the most Instagrammed photo in the Marine Corps, like just of people being on there, going up and seeing all that shit. I did it whenever, because I had heard so much about it. I was a Paris Island Marine. And I heard so much about it. I was like, when I'm out here for training, I got to go up that thing. I want to say that I did it.
Oh, yeah. You got to. Yeah. Highly flammable. Yeah,
and you
got to
do it in your Rocky boots that you can get for 25% off. Because if you're getting a little fitness in and saving money, that's what they call in the biz a double whammy, folks. Go to rockyboots.com and enter the promo code ZBT and you're going to get 25% off on your next pair of boots. Whether it be hiking boots, lounging around the house boots, your Marine Corps boots, your Army boots, your Navy boots, your Air Force boots. Coast Guard, do they wear boots or do they wear like water socks?
I think sometimes they do indeed wear, maybe it's an aqua sock boot.
That would be nice. When I went to Jamaica for my honeymoon, I forgot flip flops, and the only thing they had in the resort like hotel was aqua socks. So I had to do a jungle hike to go do like zip lining through the jungle in Jamaica, and I was wearing like 1984 aqua socks with my skinny ass leg, bigger upper body. I just looked like an absolute clown show. I wouldn't have if I would have been smart and used rockyboots.com with the promo code ZBT. I wouldn't have had to pay $54 for those stupid ass water socks. I could have paid just a little bit more and got some high quality boots with a Vibram sole. Let's move on with the show. There's news, and this morning it capped off. We had to start the show talking about it fresh. Kate, tell the people your news.
I had sex.
The other thing as a result of that, though. We don't.
It was unprotected. Yeah. It was unprotected. I am knocked up, my friends.
And many people are putting it together now that you are having a baby, you are pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where the bangs came from?
This part of getting the bangs was the last-ditch effort to not tell everyone I was pregnant, to attract everyone's faces up to mine, because I just had to switch over to the enormous, ridiculous pants that somehow create a whole bubble all the way up to your tits. You know what I mean? The stretch
material.
Yeah,
you've been known to be gassy just with regular like pants on.
Chaps, when I tell you, I am so glad you said that. When I tell you I have been in a fart bubble of hell. Oh my God. Sitting on radio with you every day. I told the ZBT guys a little bit earlier before announcing it. And our producer for radio too, texted Avery and I was like, hey man, just so you notice, like my pants are going to be undone during radio every day. Like they were, I was sitting in the radio booth just with my pants totally unzippered all the way down. Like, cause I've been so gassy. Yeah, dude. So I'm pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate keeping secrets. I'm good at it, but I hate it. So I, the fact that you told us, I appreciated that, but that always stinks trying to not tell people because you want to tell people.
And, you know, you'd want to, but so obviously there's a lot that you want to make sure that everything's going okay before you announce because you see what happens. It's so heartbreaking when people announce and then maybe something doesn't go right. So I wanted to wait till I was pretty far enough along. So I'm in my fourth month already. So I'm almost halfway through this pregnancy. And this is like the week I should be able to start to feel it. I know what the gender is. And I maybe in an upcoming week will do a gender reveal on ZBT that starts some sort of fire.
That'd be cool.
We'll do some sort of... but so I wanted to really make sure. So after the...
Wait, didn't you like point it out in the blog that you wrote?
No.
Mm-mm. No, she left it open-ended.
I left it open-ended.
All right, real quickly, let's just brainstorm some ideas of how we can do this gender reveal. First up, we could shoot some sort of artillery.
No, shooting anything out is not a good idea. You saw what happened in California. That was a fucking result of a gender reveal.
Well, that's what I love. I want something big like
oh,
that.
Forest
yeah,
fire.
Exactly. Cons, if you could get your hands on
artillery.
Oh,
I know why, because you can make all the volunteer firefighters work, and you hate them.
Right. Don't tell them that now. Oh, what if this fetus becomes a volunteer fireman? Maybe I'll have to eat my words.
Or
someday.
Fire lady.
Or fire lady. Yes, whatever the boat. But yeah, I'm super pumped about it. After the last appointment, they were like, hey, everything is great, grand, wonderful. You're in your second trimester. It's okay to start letting it out now. And then
isn't that crazy that the OBGYN gets like no, you're good. You could tweet it. You could tweet about it.
I was like, okay, but I'm going to get trolled pretty hard. But I'm super pumped. I am really excited. This is actually a really good thing. I was writing the blog. I didn't know like what the etiquette was. I was like, so I literally Googled pregnancy, tell your bosses, ? And they're like, yeah, you want to do that at some point. So I was like, okay. So I walk into Dave's office and Dave is such an open door. Normally with him, if you have anything to say, you can say it in front of everybody. And so I shut the door, and before he could even look up, I was like, started word vomiting because I was nervous for some reason. Even though I knew, you know, Dave's going to be super cool about it. But anyway.
Or just not care.
Or like literally. Whatever.
So like, what do I have to do?
Well, I think.
Does this affect me?
What do you need from me?
I think that's what made me nervous is that I knew Dave, like, and I don't mean this in a mean way, but that he could probably care less. Like, you do your job. He doesn't care if you're purple, blue, pregnant with like quadruplets, whatever. So I go in there, I shut the door, and I'm like, hey Dave, so I already talked to Erica. And he looked up and he's like, are you quitting? And I was like, oh no, kind of the opposite of that. I literally jazz hands burst forth from my body, and just I started to jazz hands as I said too loud, I'm knocked up. I literally shouted,
Jesus.
I'm knocked up at Dave.
Be weirder.
I couldn't. My face then turned bright red. He sat back looking like stunned, like not stunned that I was pregnant, but stunned that I was being so fucking weird in his office. And I was like,
I don't know why every interaction you have with
him
like
is
that.
Weird. And I was walking to his office like, this one's going to be fine. Be normal. And then I started over explaining. I was like pregnant, knocked up, like I'm pregnant. And like,
yeah, no, I get it.
Jersey Shore, too many drinks. I started telling him like the circumstances under which it happened. And he was like, okay. All right. Is this a good thing or bad? But yeah, so it was fine. But so now cat's out of the bag. Baby's in the bag.
Now, before we move on and we get started with our actual stuff, will you make the promise to the listener that you will cut your hair like John and Kate plus eight?
I will absolutely cut my hair like John and Kate plus eight. And want to know what already makes me insufferable? Hold on a second.
Uh-oh.
This is great for... Where is it? Hold on.
She's looking for something.
I'm looking for something. Aha. Uh-huh. Look Found what it. I've already got lined up.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God. Well,
that's kind of the gender reveal right there, Kate.
Yeah, seriously.
The few, the proud... It's a boy. It has a penis. The son of a U.S. Marine. I already have the onesie. I'm going to be that. I always saw other babies like wearing all the military stuff. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And I'm like, how do I get a tiny pair of dress blues? Now I'm
you know, the other day I was actually looking on Amazon. I was like, I got to get Kate one of these tactical diaper bags. That's what my present for you is going to be. So you could just have one and ready to go.
The kind that advertised to cool dads. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was with some folks last week and the gentleman is about to have a baby and he was receiving gifts and he got one of those tactical diaper bags as well as the baby character that has like, what is it called?
A baby little, holster?
Nah, baby Bjorn.
Yeah,
baby
something like Bjorn. That, but it was like the military version of it.
Kate, I also think that you should get the one that says reporting for duty, D-O-T-D-Y.
I absolutely will. This baby's going to have the worst clothes. So
I'm just saying we need to lean into this.
Absolutely. Hey, I'm growing tits for the first time in my life. It's a treat.
All right, let's get going with the actual show. Round number one. You already know what it is. This is a story that has been everywhere in the news. Normally, even Katie Context likes to give a little bit of context for what's going on. If you don't know the president is in the hospital for coronavirus, you're dead anyway.
Wait, like so? What?
You haven't been paying attention to anything at all. The president's in the hospital with coronavirus. Whenever that news came out that you saw the president not only had coronavirus, but was in Walter Reed, what were your initial thoughts?
That Twitter's going to be a shit show, an absolute shit show. And I was right.
I don't know. I just started singing Alanis Morissette. Isn't it ironic?
And
yeah, I thought that whenever he was walking on the plane, one, the initial pictures that it wasn't the whole thing that was released where I thought the whole idea of him going to Walter Reed, not the idea of it, but just the perception behind it, the way that they orchestrated, fucking bizarre, man. It is. Yeah. That's why he likes Kim Jong-un so much. That's why he tweets such positive things. They brought out every single staffer that works in the White House, put him behind like a bicycle rail and had everybody cheering for him to go like, yeah, you can do it. And then he's out there. Dude, you got coronavirus. Your oxygen levels are below 90. You're having all these symptoms. You got a fever. Take off your fucking suit top and just walk to the hospital. Like, just get out and go. Do it secretly. Get into the vehicle. Go out. Why make a show out of everything? Like, oh, no, this is fine. And that was the common theme of the weekend. It's not that I have coronavirus. It's not empathy for all the people that did it. It was, I have it. I'm still working with blank sheets of paper, a completely empty desk, and still wearing cufflinks. What the fuck are we doing?
What are we doing? That was the best thing that could have happened for him right before the election. What a boost. I mean, brilliant.
No.
Absolutely.
Are you kidding?
Brilliant.
The polling shows completely the opposite. That people are like, how could he get it and be in the hospital and he say it was fake news the entire time, didn't wear a mask?
I don't know who's doing the polls. I was in the boonies this weekend and every nook and cranny is covered in shit for him, man. I was like, holy shit, this guy is gonna, I don't know. I feel like there was like get well soon signs for him on fences in Pennsylvania. I'm like, what the fuck are we doing? Anyway,
the whole thing was just, it's ridiculous the way that everything's going on. For the military aspects, one of the things that people were like, oh, how does this affect national security? They're going to know that the president's not paying attention, that he's focused on other things. What?
That's quite a large leap to make all that.
Like, do they think that he's the one sitting in the control center all the time, like constantly looking at the bleeps on the radar? That's not his job.
Right.
They're still going to be able to go and talk to the people they need to.
But I think the misconception is that, you know, the commander in chief, he is the commander in chief. He does ultimately have say over the entire military, but he's not making day to day decisions. Something only gets to him if it's super, super high level. You know, whether or not, you know, 19 Cav does PT tomorrow morning is not up to the president. So, you know, we don't need to concern ourselves with that.
And I just like reading around on Twitter, did you see and I tried to confirm, I believe that this really is who this is, but the chief, whatchamacallit, what's his title? So I make sure I have it right. Oh, fuck,
chief,
I lost it.
Whatchamacallit.
Oh, I lost it. Fuck me.
Well, give us the gist.
It was the chief disaster, the head of
whoever, whatever title it
disaster
was.
Disaster medicine at Walter Reed put out a tweet that was basically like, Because he did.
Then. Oh, the attending medical officer, Walter Reed, who works at Georgetown University, came out and said that whenever President Trump gathered his motorcade to go wave at the well-to-doers that were standing outside of Walter Reed, that it was one of the most bizarre and insane things that he's ever seen in his life in practicing medicine. And this is true. Like, if you're a family member of the Secret Service, the president actively has coronavirus. It's not an incubation theory. He's fucking hospitalized for coronavirus. To make Secret Service members get in a car with him and drive him so he can wave at people is one of the most selfish things that a president has ever done in U.S. history. That shit is insane, man. Like, if that's your family, if that's your family member is a member of the Secret Service, you are willing, you know it's part of the job. If a bullet comes, you step in line and you take the bullet instead of the president. That's your job. But as a leader, dude, I saw it just yesterday on Twitter whenever Lethality Jane was talking about how there's certain things that happen in the military that wouldn't be okay in civilian life. For example, one of those is when you pass out during PT and they give you the silver bullet. They'll put a thermometer up your ass. And one of the guys that was an officer chimed in and said, yes, but I'd much rather have that level of embarrassment than me have to pin a letter to one of their parents and saying that they didn't get the treatment because I was nervous to make them do that, like where they have the proper care. Your responsibility is to not put people at risk if it's not worth it. There has to be risk mitigation, ORM across the board. This is fucking stupid.
Or is stupid. Is this where the conspiracy theories come in? Because I've been seeing those all over social media too. Among them is that he doesn't, I'm not saying I believe these, is that he doesn't have coronavirus, but it's a ruse for publicity before the election. Obviously, there's no way he'd be at Walter Reed doing all this shit if he didn't have it. But I'm seeing so many crazy conspiracy theories about this too. Like, I've seen at least 15 different reasons for why this is happening and what's happening and whatever. And I'm like, no, man, we're just in Wacky Town. That's all.
That's it. I will say this. How great is it, though, when you're sick, when you get doted on and you get attention?
Yes.
So I kind of get where he's coming from. Gets out of the hospital and he just wants that, you know, that loving.
Yeah, because if we know anything about him, he lacks attention. My favorite part of the weekend is there's like every, well, I guess I shouldn't say favorite, but there is about every 20 minutes, there was a new person in the White House that was getting diagnosed with coronavirus.
Yeah.
My favorite of which was my friend Chris Christie. Oh, Chris Christie, you lovable fat fuck. So Chris Christie gets coronavirus. He has the audacity to tweet out, well, yeah, I tested positive for coronavirus. Make myself go stay at a hospital just for precautionary sake. You know, it's because of the asthma. I have asthma. That's the reason why I'm going to go. Not because I weigh 300 pounds and I pour the little M&Ms into the big M&Ms while I'm at a game. It's not because of that.
My personal favorite of the weekend was, as per usual, our gal Kellyanne Conway's daughter.
Yes, that was spicy.
Kellyanne Conway has a teenage daughter who I used to think, like, I went through a phase with my mom when I was a teenage girl where we butted
heads.
And
not like teenage, like 19. She's teenage, like 15.
Yeah.
She's right. Like young.
She's a lot younger than someone who's speaking the way she is.
And it's, everybody knows moms and daughters do butt heads during this time. And like, it was no different with my mom and I.
Yeah.
But then I see Kellyanne Conway and her daughter, Claudia. I think it's Claudia. And I'm like, holy fucking shit.
That whole family, we've talked about it on the Chaps and Kate show. They have to have a reality show. If they don't, what are we even doing here? The last 4 years have been completely worthless if we don't have a Conway reality show. Because Claudia's out there tweeting, yeah, my mom told me she didn't have coronavirus. And turns out she did, bitch.
Then she went on she went on TikTok even before it was confirmed that Kellyanne Conway had coronavirus. And she was like, when your mom, when everybody in the White House tests positive for coronavirus, your mom doesn't say anything, but she's coughing all over the house all damn day long. And it was like, isn't that suspicious? And so, I mean, this girl goes on. She did a TikTok the other week where she just destroyed her bedroom for no reason. It was great. But anyway.
A lot of poor thing. And like her parents aren't paying attention at all.
Yeah.
Kellyanne's announcing that she has coronavirus. Claudia's out here just going bananas on her mom. And George is in there just a tweeting away, tagging the Lincoln Project. Like, yeah. Oh, guys, this is it.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. If you're a writer right now for another great political show like the ones Chaps watches, like West Wing or something, you don't know where to begin.
You can't begin anywhere.
No,
like,
you can't.
That's the thing that's really fucked up right now, is that this whole ordeal is ruining TV for the remainder of time. It just is.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can't top it.
Mm-hmm. Like, if this was legitimately the House of Cards plot, you'd be like, oh, okay, no way.
Also, the crowd.
Yeah, I'm out on this.
The crowd.
This is like the fucking season 8 of 24.
I picture the security at Walter Reed every morning looking out the window and seeing which goofballs are showing up to root on someone in the hospital outside with like all, and you're probably just like, oh my God. Even if you're voting.
Did you guys see the picture of the presidential suite at Walter Reed?
No.
Oh, so they have a presidential suite at Walter Reed. And I've been to Walter Reed a bunch of times. I had no idea that was in there. It's like a 4-bedroom little apartment that's there. The last time that a president was in there, I believe, was when Reagan was shot. And he was in there for a little while. There's also pictures floating around of our guy, old Lyndon Johnson, hanging out with Ike while he was in there. That the juxtaposition of those two is unreal, too, because Johnson was like 6'4 and Ike was like 5'7. So they're like hanging out. Ike just looks so little while they're sitting there. But this place looks like it hasn't been updated since Johnson was president. I mean, if you picture your grandma's bedding, that's what it is. You know, President Trump used to his fucking mansions and shit like that, his penthouse on Fifth Avenue, walks into this place and he's like, what the fuck is this? He probably felt like that dude that Kate and I had on the Chaps and Kate show that goes around to all the dead malls and the shitty motels.
Yeah. So
that's probably how they felt.
You're saying this is somewhere I would love to stay on a hiking trip.
100%. Oh, you love it.
Oh,
quaint.
What a treat.
I would say it's quaint.
What a treat.
What does that suite smell like?
Must. I mean, it has to just smell like must.
Mothballs and slate from underball.
Yeah, slate definitely from
underball.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I wonder if any presidents jerked off in there.
For sure, for sure.
Good
Johnson.
Question.
Lyndon B. Johnson.
Yeah.
Lyndon B.
I need to talk to a housekeeper and be like, so who's throwing the fattest ropes on their fucking rope wash rags?
I would like to know.
You know,
I'd like to know.
Rutherford B. Hayes.
Yeah.
Mad ropes.
You ever wish you could line all the presidents up and see who truly had the biggest penis?
Got to be Johnson. I mean, I would put my money on either Johnson. I mean, he nicknamed his dick Jumbo.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if he gave it that name. I'd say either him. You know, Lincoln had a long, skinny wiener.
It was long. Yeah, it was long, but it was skinny. Right.
Well, but it's distinguished.
And the
slender.
He was uncircumcised. The top was shaped like a top hat, from what I heard. So.
What's that word that they use? Not petite. What's the other word that they use? When they
petite?
No, whenever they're
dainty.
Describing, huh?
Dainty?
No, it's whenever you have pants. You have husky, regular,
meaty.
And then what's the other? Huh?
Skinny.
Meaty.
Slim cut?
Slim, yeah,
no.
Slim.
Damn it.
Bootleg.
I'll think of it.
Okay.
Fuck. All right, let's move on to round number two.
The one this that got me pregnant, really great. Anyway.
All right, let's move on to round number two. Kate, what do we got?
Okay, hey, from Rachel Riley at the Fayetteville Observer, a former Fort Bragg soldier and a current sergeant are among 11 people charged in a marriage fraud ring, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. A federal indictment alleges that, great name coming up, 37-year-old Ebenezer Yeboah Assane, the former soldier, planned and organized the sham marriages on foreign nationals to soldiers. A federal indictment alleges that 37-year-old Ebenezer Yeboah Assane, the former soldier, planned and organized the sham marriages on foreign nationals to soldiers at Fort Bragg. Robert J. Higdon Jr., the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of North Carolina, said in a news release. The charges include 29 counts of marriage fraud, transporting and harboring aliens, visa fraud, obstruction, unlawful disposition of U.S. property, false statements in immigration matters, and conspiracy to commit marriage fraud. The purpose of the conspiracy was for the foreign-born nationals to evade immigration laws and obtain permanent resident status for the soldiers, and for, of course, for the soldiers to receive their BAH, their basic allowance for housing. Samuel Manu Agyapong, 33, a sergeant at Fort Bragg, has also been charged with obstructing an official proceeding by attempting to destroy evidence, influencing the testimony of a witness. So, to me, in my mind, this is like a really spicy version of 90 Day Fiancé. that's going on right now. It's a spicy meatball of marriage fraud. But I mean, you look at this story and you're like, okay, so they got caught, but there is just an endless amount of people getting married for the PAH. Am I right?
Yeah, I think it's a hard thing to prove. Like, I don't know how you prove what somebody's intent is in getting married. And really, who are we to decide? That's why, I mean, BAH should be something that probably goes away anyways. Like, you should just transfer it and have everybody gets paid essentially the same thing. Like, if you want to live on the barracks, you don't. Then you step away from the shit. Because the BAH concept is really archaic in the way that it's designed. And it's unfair for those who don't want to get married or who have no desire to get married or just against it. Like, so you have... Like, the government in this case decides whose marriage is valid and whose marriage is not valid, essentially. Like, if you want to just get married just because you want to, sure. Like, I think that should be okay. I know a dude that when I was at Quantico married the Wawa clerk right before he went on a deployment, and it was just to get the BAH. I didn't have any problem with it. I didn't turn him in.
No. Oh, I thought you were going to say it was just to get the free Wawa bucks.
Yeah, free Wawa. No, that's a good deal. Cash. Man. Yeah, you get free sandwiches sometimes.
So, a couple things. Number one, this dude, Samuel Agyapong.
Yeah.
What's up with him? He's 33, still in E5. I got questions there. That's number one.
That's a good question.
Number two, this is just a classic case of soldiers and NCOs and barracks lawyers just thinking they know more than the system and they're smarter than the system. They know every single which way around it. So they say, don't worry about it. We're not going to get caught. We're not going to get in trouble. There's probably these guys taking some sort of cut, and the soldiers were probably getting, in addition to the BAH, they probably got told, hey, we're going to give you a little extra. So you get some 22-year-old and you tell him or her, hey, you got to just basically get married on paper and you're going to make $5,000?
Well, that's the list, Cons. I'm glad you said the 22 because the list of the other people who were involved are like 22-year-old corporal, 23-year-old specialist, 21-year-old PFC. Like, you have like this list of just young folks. And if you're young in the military, let's put it this way. It's fucking field day Thursday. Your sergeant comes up to you and is like, hey, there's this lady I know. She's pretty good looking. She wants to get married, but she has to come over here first, and she doesn't want to leave. You get married, you get BAH, you get to move out in town. You don't have to field day anymore. After you've had a rough field day and like your E7, your E6 being a dick, you'll do just about anything to not have to come back next week, including marrying a foreign national if that's the opportunity that you're given.
Well, what I'm thinking here is it does maybe start to delve into like maybe not quite human trafficky territory.
Yeah, that was my worry too.
But because as we saw with a couple other stories we've done with, where was it, Bahrain? The Navy in Bahrain, mm-hmm. crazy shit like that.
Pregnancy brain. Love it.
So I'm thinking this fella who's doing all the fraud and everything, I'm thinking these women are getting their statuses then in the United States, mm-hmm. there's obviously maybe the family of the women are paying him big bucks to get them over here too. So there's something in it. Maybe these men, these young 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds marrying these foreign nationals are also getting some of that cash to marry them too. So maybe there's an extra incentive for them to do it.
For sure they are.
Yeah.
For sure. That's why they were indicted too. Like that's part of the fraud against them. I mean, I understand why you have to do this, especially when you're dealing with military members, because the security threat, depending on what country they're coming from and all those other things. But it's just normally, if it's a normal situation, like one of my Marines marrying a Wawa clerk to get married to move off base, maybe we should treat people like grown adults and let them move off base.
Yeah.
Like if they desire. Maybe we should do that.
For the love of God.
Is that one of the more archaic things we do in the military? Say, hey, until you're this rank, you have to stay under our supervision and live in this dorm, basically?
Then again, to me, that ties in with small unit leadership. Like, you got to have some sergeants around. And
I think that's the caveat that has to be made. And our guy, Chief Warrant Officer Bobby Yarbo, made it recently on Paris Island's Facebook page, where he talked about, see, you have all the time, they're not allowed to move out of the barracks, they're not allowed to get married, counsel them on this, counsel them on that, but then at the same time you want to take the E4 who's playing video games with the E3 in his room and be like, oh, you can't do that either, it's fraternization. So then you're really putting down the people that are, you have 300 people living in the same building that you, all doing the same job and experience, but you have to take out some of them because you're a higher rank. Like, you can't the way that we're doing things, it doesn't make sense. Like, you want to have, like we talked about at Fort Hood, where the major general wants to have small unit leadership back in place. You do that by developing camaraderie and allowing them to hang out and do things while also knowing that you have to have the barrier and the boundaries at work. Like, I think that that's an easy thing to do if you're smart and you're capable.
I say,
yeah, but that's something that's easier said than done in some circumstances.
NCO barracks, and it's fucking sick. But then the other barracks are still the old shitty moldy ones that the little underlings got to live in. But it's like, I want to get to that sweet barracks with the indoor golf room and the smash room that they had in the Jersey Shore house and a duck phone, you know?
Yeah, make that punishment for getting busted down even that much worse. Like, imagine moving from the golf barracks and then you have to go back.
Right, exactly. One really cool barracks, like a mini golf course inside of it. Let me design it. People will change.
They should. I mean, that would be awesome. If we had a barracks, just one barracks in the entire DOD, we need some colonel, some brigadier general to reach out and let us design one barracks. That's all we're asking.
That's all we're asking.
We don't need a bunch of them. Just give us one. We'll even pay for it. The barracks brought to you by our friends at ZBT. That'll be it. And then as soon as you come in, all you have to do to get in, instead of having like a cat card or whatever, you just scan it on your phone and it downloads, subscribes, and reviews with 5 stars. And
here's a little fuzzy math, okay? Now, excuse me, any younger enlisted can get married and move off post, and then they're given that BAH, right? So that money is there for them. So for all the lower enlisted who are staying in the barracks, we take the money we would have given them for BAH because it's already there, it already exists, and then that's how we improve the barracks with that money.
Oh, that is just absolutely never going to happen.
No, no. Way. Sorry, we like the mold. We like the mold.
Because by the time you get to the position where you're able to make those decisions, you're like, it wasn't that bad in the barracks. I had a good time.
Exactly.
Like, you completely forget about how shitty it was.
By the way, my barracks would have a huge, it would be like 6 stories, 5th and 6th floor. The only way they'd be allowed down is by swirly sliding board.
Oh, or what about if you did it in swim qual? If you had a level 1 swim qual, you got to stay in a barracks that had one of those slides that go out of your room like Richie Rich.
That's what I'm thinking. And you know my NCO barracks would have a lazy river.
Oh, yeah. And a McDonald's in it.
Right through the smoke pit, for sure. Yeah, it would be the Richie Rich.
See, that's
house.
What they should do. Like, if you change the chow hall to make it like a 90s mall food court where you could go in, they had like Panda Express, they had Kenny Rogers Roasters, mm-hmm. they had a Great American Cookie, an Annie Ann's, if they had an Orange Julius in there, that would be sick.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about. The whole really reason is. For that story, that's not even a real story made up. We just really would like to design a barracks. If you know anyone in the contracting world, please let us know. Yeah, blueprints. We're ready.
We have ideas. Right.
Let's move on to round number 3, where this barracks is actually on the grounds and they have to stay there for their 24-hour duty. It's a different place. It's the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Now, this is round number 3. We don't usually do a lot of goofing when it comes to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers, but I did saw. I did see. Yeah, I did saw.
Old Jacksonville head ass coming out there.
Somebody reached out and said that on the first episode of ZBT, my voice sounded so much more Southern than it does now. Now I speak like I don't have a regional diction at all, which is strange. I didn't even think that my voice went from like Southern Florida boy to now whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But that's neither here nor there. So I was looking at Twitter, saw Task and Purpose retweeted this TikTok of the tomb guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And what happened in the situation was that there was a photographer who came across and came past the rail guard of where they're supposed to go. Now, the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, some of the things that they have to do, it's so precision. And I was reading about it last night about how they have to do it. For instance, whenever they turn in to face the actual tomb, they stand there and pause for 21 seconds. Getting to the place mentally where you know where 21 seconds is, like just right off the top of your head, is crazy that they could do that and maintain that concentration for 30 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
A photographer came across the spot that he wasn't supposed to, and this tomb guard had his "I wish a motherfucker would" moment. Listen to it, and you can hear the anger in his voice.
Behind the chains
sitting there watching this ceremony happen, seeing somebody go across, and not only does he go from straight up carry arms, he goes from right shoulder arms down to port and ready to go. He also cocks one back. Like, I don't know if they actually have rounds in, like, in their weapons. I would love to know if they do, because you can hear it. Whenever he goes down, he goes back to port. You can hear him fucking slide the, you can hear it slide back and go into position. And he almost comes to like a ready position. And I was like, holy shit. Yeah. Like, are they locked and loaded, the Tomb of Unknown Soldiers guarding that motherfucker?
We need to know.
Like, how big, if you're that photographer, because I could see it. Like, you, when you're a photographer and you have a fancy boy, fancy girl camera, and you're doing, like, say you're doing official ceremonies in the military, the rules don't apply to you
right.
when you have a camera.
Right.
Like, if you have to go to the position for whenever they're reading a promotion warrant or they're reading an award citation, you don't have to go to a position of attention at all. Whenever the colors are playing, you're taking pictures, you're not, everything else is oblivious to you. I wonder if this is like a combat camera person who thought, you know what? The rules don't apply to me. I can go inside this. And this guy was like, no, the fuck you can't.
Well, also, too, I feel like when you have you're looking through a camera, you lose sense kind of where you are. You get so into it. Because I was talking about, I was at a wedding once where the photographer flipped backwards into the baptismal pool because she was so busy looking through the camera, she lost all sense of like exactly where she was. But you're right. This is the ultimate I wish a motherfucker would moment. If you're doing that over and over all day long for a whole post of your career, you're going to kind of hope somebody sets a little toe over your line and you're going to go.
Because you know they think about it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
If he has that speech memorized to that where, boom, he could drop it out, you know they're sitting in that little room and they're like, man, somebody jumps across. I'm just going to butt stroke him. I'd rather get out of here than I'll just hit it.
How great is this, though, too, for these people who came to see the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier? Because by itself, just going to see the Sentinel at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier is very, very cool to see. But, you know, he walks back and forth, he changes his rifle, and you're like, okay, a few minutes, okay, we've seen it, now we can leave. But if you go on the day when you see something like this happen, what a great day that is.
I think
is.
If you've never seen it, I think your butthole puckers big time.
Oh, yeah.
You're not sure if it's like part of the ceremony or
right?
if this is real or
is this
not.
Part of the show?
Right. It's like when Lincoln got shot.
Yeah,
yeah,
like,
same thing.
Is this part of the?
That's fine.
I remember I was probably in fifth or sixth grade, and I was from probably fourth grade to now. I was just an enormous pain in the ass with my parents, and I would do these like I would just be such a brat when we went on trips if I didn't get my way or something. I would just like. And we were going to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. I probably wanted to go to like the ball pit at the Science Mall or something. I'm like, and I did not understand what the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier was at all. I was young and stupid and I wasn't paying attention. And my dad had like a come to Jesus moment with me. He's like, we're about to go over here. So help me God. Like if you make any kind
of
scene.
Yeah, that moment where dad has to get like right in your face where he's like 6 inches away from your face.
This isn't a place where we goof or where we complain or where we whatever.
It's a no goof zone.
And, yeah, and very quickly I realized.
They actually have signs out to say it's a no goof zone.
Like nobody wants to hear a 12-year-old complaining while this is happening. So yeah, no, it definitely, even when it goes perfectly, it gives you chills up and down your spine. Even asshole middle school me was blown away by it. So,
and there was, speaking of that, there was some comments like to that tweet where they were asking, we have all these weapons. Has anybody actually tried to ever deface it? And I went to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier's actual website and they said, yes, that's the reason why we now guard the tomb. Back in the early 1920s, we didn't have guards and the tomb looked much different. It was flat at ground level with about 70-ton marble cap. People often came to the cemetery in those days and few actually used the tomb as a picnic area, likely because of the view. Soon after 1925, they posted a civilian guard. In 1926, a U.S. Army soldier was posted during cemetery hours. On July 1st, 1937, guard duty was expanded to the 24-hour watch. Since then, the ceremony has evolved through the years to what you see today. Today, the most challenges faced by the Sentinels are tourists who are speaking too loudly or attempting to get a better picture by entering the post. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the things that these folks have to do, we interviewed one of the guards for a while ago, and the discipline that it takes to be in this position, I don't think people really realize because your uniform has to be perfect. They say that every day it could take 8 hours for each one of the guards to prep their uniform because they're going out in these full, thick wool uniforms in the height of summer. Like, it's hot as shit, and they're still doing this.
And the weather there is, I mean, often it's like you've seen the photos where the videos where it's like pouring rain or storming or super windy or like whatever. They're always, it's so impressive. And to your point about how people used to picnic on it pretty much back before they had the guards, that feeling that you get, like, I go down to where the Twin Towers were a few times a year, and I just stroll around and reflect whatever. And during non-COVID times, when all the tourists are there, I have seen people with the two big fountains with the names. I have seen people plop down like a sandwich and unravel the foil and start to eat on like the names. And people, they're like civilian versions of the unknown soldier guards. People get them. So, but just seeing the tiniest little disrespect and your heart, this sudden blind rage that you feel where like, so it's probably for the best that they have these soldiers there so other people don't like totally flip out. You know they've got this if somebody else is being an idiot. But it's pretty crazy. It's pretty nutty. I don't know. I'm rambling.
Yeah, it's a tough duty, and I think that everybody appreciates those that could do it because it's not, that would not be an easy thing to do. Yeah. And I want to mention because they have the 24-hour shift where they're responsible to do it for 30 minutes during the wintertime. That first shift where you go from 30 minutes back to an hour for the summer would be so shitty.
Brutal.
That would suck so bad. But conversely, the one where you switch over and it's wintertime now, still a little bit warm outside, and you're like, oh, 30 minutes. That was nothing. That flew by like that easy day. So shout out to all of those folks that are guards. I had a buddy that I worked with here that was one of the guards, and he perpetrated a lot of these lies that I now know are lies. Like, they can never drink, they can never curse, they can never do any of these things. Sergeant Ferguson, you're a fucking liar. How about that?
Firewatch. So,
yeah, but that's all part of it, though, too, to just make it seem even more reverent and more important when they believe all these rumors about what they have to do.
No doubt about it. Oh, did you ever have to stop a photographer? Oh, yeah. I butt stroked like 5 a day. I totally butt stroked him right in the fucking face.
I have to get a new butt stock put on all the time because it wears down to the nub so quick from just the people in the face all day long.
They didn't do shit. And then I got out because I wanted to, and I moved to Indiana, got a new job because there's 80,000 openings in Indiana with our good friends at InVet. If you're getting out of the Marine Corps or you're getting out of the military in general, make sure you think about old Indiana. I think Indiana slips through the cracks a lot of times, but it's a great spot to be in, especially if you're a veteran. They have 80,000 job openings, like I said, and InVet is the connecting point that is connecting employers to the veteran workforce. All you have to do is sign up. It's easy. Go to invets.org/0, create a profile to learn more about the Indiana communities. Browse the current job openings in those communities and receive a free t-shirt. That's invets.org, invets.org/0. It's an easy spot. We get that
question
constantly.
I do.
Kate does love
Indiana. I have such a lady boner for Indiana. I really do. I don't know if they'd want me to say that part out loud. But
no, I think it's fine.
Again, I say this every time, but I have family there and I fucking love going there to visit. And I've never had a bad time. They're fun lake people. It's like such a laid back, like, it's just such a
fun
vibe.
Lake people. They're not crazy lake people.
Full of Jordan Bears.
Oh my gosh, yes. Oh, yes. It's picture Jordan Berry.
I mean, and if you're in Camp Pendleton right now, or if you're around one of the larger bases in the country, go on Zillow where you're currently at, and then go on Zillow in Indiana and see how far your money goes. I almost guarantee it goes a lot further in Indiana than it will anywhere else in the country.
Yeah.
Go to invets.org/0 to get a free shirt, sign up, get yourself a job for whenever you get out. All right, let's move on to round number 4. This one is about the World War II show that I saw. Now, normally, whenever I'm watching something military-related, I probably am difficult to watch it with because I'm like, oh, that's not fucking real. Like, the Hurt Locker, oh, that's stupid, and shit like that. But I don't have, like, a visceral reaction for something being done. This story was completely different. The host of this show is a survival guy, kind of like Bear Grylls, I guess, or Bear Grylls, whatever the fuck his name is, where he goes out to all these different crazy locations around the world and checks things out and, like, knows about snakes. Like, for example, he's in the jungle in one show, grabbed a snake, and he's like, oh, this is a golden back whatever snake. And he's like, it's venomous, and but its teeth, like you just know that shit off the top of your head. Yeah, dude, you got a fucking card. They showed you it, and they planted that snake there. You didn't happen across that snake.
Can I make one point? Not only are people who have snakes a little bit odd, I think people who know too much about snakes are just as odd. That's my belief.
I told you, I was once down in Fort Bragg visiting a visiting somebody. I won't get too into the details, but they were like, yeah, you want to come up and this is on base housing. You want to come up and see the snake room? So they had three kids sleeping in one room so that they could have a snake room. Okay. And they were like, we're about snake to feed people. Them. Do you? And I was like, oh, my God. Yeah. So anyway,
I'm not kidding. There's a dude that came in a couple I don't know how long ago, it was a while ago, and he was doing some work for me in my backyard, and he came across a snake that was in the yard. He was like, hey, just so you know, underneath your porch in the back, I think there's like a den of snakes. And I was like, oh my God. I immediately went on Amazon and purchased a 5-gallon bucket of mothballs and just dumped them all over my yard.
Poison.
Around the edge.
Poison.
I hate snakes with a passion. So this guy already on my shit list for being a fucking weirdo. So I think the premise of this show is good. They want to show the actual environment, what it looks like in some of these locations in the Pacific Theater during World War II. Great premise for a show. However, they leave out so much shit. For example, one of the battles that they talked about on the very first episode was Palawan from the Philippines. And it's a story of how certain American soldiers, American Marines, were captured as prisoner of POWs. And I'll tell you what happened actually at the camp, and then I'll tell you what happened during the show. And you can see why I was pissed. So we're going to go through this a little bit. It is a little bit long, but I think it's incredibly interesting, and it's one of the stories that I hadn't heard about. So here we go. With the stunning defeats suffered by the United States, Great Britain, and the Netherlands in the early months of the Pacific Wars, thousands of Allied military personnel became prisoners of the Japanese. The Americans captured in the Philippines were initially detained in filthy, overcrowded POW camps near Manila, but eventually most were shipped to other parts of the Japanese Empire as slave laborers. Among the American prisoners in the Philippines were 346 men who were sent 350 miles on August 1st, 1942, to the POW camps that were north of Manila. Although the prisoners' numbers fluctuated throughout the war, the brutal treatment they received at the hands of the Japanese guards was always the same. The men were beaten with pick handles. Kickings, slappings were regular daily occurrence. Prisoners who attempted to escape were executed. The Palawan compound was the Camp 10A, and the prisoners were quartered in several unused Filipino constabulary buildings that were sadly dilapidated. Food was minimal. Each day, prisoners received a mess kit of wormy Cambodian rice, a canteen cup of soup made from the Philippine variant of sweet potatoes. Prisoners who had to work who couldn't work had their rations cut 30% a day. When six Americans were caught stealing food in December of 1942, they were tied to coconut trees, beaten, whipped, and with a wire, and beaten again with a wooden club 3 inches in diameter. After this brutal episode, they were forced to stand at attention while a guard beat them unconscious. After which the prisoners were revived to undergo further beatings. A Japanese private punished two Americans who were caught taking green papayas from a tree in the compound by breaking their left arms with an iron rod. In September of 1944, 159 of the American POWs at Palawan were returned to Manila. The Japanese estimated that the remaining 150 men could complete the arduous labor in the airfield, hauling and crushing coral gravel by hand by pouring concrete 7 days a week. The total area to be cleared was approximately 2,400 yards by 225 yards, with the actual airstrip measuring 1,530 yards, and it was 75 yards wide. Suddenly, in an orchestrated and obviously planned move, 50 to 60 soldiers, Japanese soldiers under Sato's leadership, doused the wooden shelters that the men were living in with buckets of gasoline and set them on fire with flaming torches, followed by hand grenades. The screams of the trapped and doomed prisoners mingled with the cheers of the Japanese soldiers and their laughter at their officers. As men engulfed in flames broke out of their fiery death traps, the Japanese guard machine-gunned, bayoneted, and clubbed them to death. Most of the Americans never made it out of the trenches in the compound before they were barbarously murdered, and several closed with their tormentors in hand-to-hand combat, succeeding in killing a few of the Japanese attackers. We all know this because of a Marine survivor, Rufus Smith, described the escape from his shelter and coming up from the ladder into hell. About 30 to 40 Americans escaped from the massacre, either through the double-woven, 62-foot-high barbed wire fence and under it, where some of the secret escape routes have been concealed for use in emergency. About 30 to 40 were successful in getting through the fence and down to the water's edge, and several of those attempts to cross the Puerto Princesa's Bay immediately, but were shot in the water. So the story goes on to say that these people, what they had to endure to get to the water's edge that the guy on the survival show swam through, and he made it look relatively easy.
Yeah. Like
he was wearing clean clothes. He weighed probably 210 pounds. He was obviously in good shape. It does not take into account, and they didn't stress, that these people were doing it with beaten and broken bones, that they had to endure so much hardship to get to that spot, that they had already been in prison for 4 or 5 years eating nothing but nutrients, and they had to go. There was a camera crew that was surrounded by the guy. He was safe the entire time. If you're going to do a show like this, you absolutely have to stress that your accomplishment was getting across is nothing. It's nothing. You're not in fear for your life when you're doing this on a survival show. And to put yourself in that position where you can do it, and not only do it once, but you can do 10 of the worst things that happened to American military members in World War II, and put yourself on film accomplishing all these different things without expressing the hardships that these folks were going through, I found it to be incredibly tone deaf and just ridiculously stupid.
What channel was this on?
History.
So you're saying,
wow, that's surprising that they would allow that on that channel, because usually they're a little bit above
and they tried to have their little moments where they explained a little bit that was going on in the camps, but a lot of it was focusing on this dude has survival skills, and I thought that was fucking stupid.
So you're saying he's got Firewatch, probably
big time Firewatch.
Yeah,
we just don't realize like what happens and like how these folks had to swim that far. There are certain, they go on in this story, and when I was first reading it and went and read several different source articles about what happened here, I was really shocked, because there was a lot of times where Marines have been treated so poorly, they heard their buddies screaming, that they would run up to the Japanese soldiers and beg to be shot, beg to be killed. And the Japanese soldiers would oftentimes bayonet them in the stomach and leave them just to there to suffer and die out. It is horrible what happened to these people. And I think to make it the focus of a show for entertainment really, really missed the mark.
Yeah. I absolutely agree with you. I didn't see the show, but now I'm just as furious.
But now I'm never going to see it. Fuck that show. Fuck that show time.
I just don't know. It's just like, Kate, it's like you were telling about the people who would unwrap a sandwich on the 9/11 memorial, and then people would like this make this show and just completely minimize what these men had to suffer through. I don't understand how you could be that level of tone deaf.
Well, we are going to tweet that we're going to leave a Yelp review for History Channel that's going to knock their fucking socks off. I'll tell you that much.
Kate feels awkward. That's why she's telling jokes.
No, I don't. I'm just trying to. It's heavy. It's really.
We're going to lighten up the mood, Kate. Don't worry. We're going to move on to round number 5 and do a little Hot Pocket goofing. Get back into our wheelhouse a little bit. I just saw that story and I was mad, so I wanted to tell the listener that I was mad about it as well. Round number 5. It's big time news. What do we got, Kate?
Yeah, this is more my wheelhouse, friend. Thank you. History, I guess, is neat and all, especially when it's super important like that. But Hot Pockets, you really can't top it.
Hot Pockets!
Snacking staple in the United States military barracks could be in short supply all the way into next year as Hot Pockets fall victim to the coronavirus supply chain issues. Nestle, which makes the microwavable meat and cheese-filled crust that many Americans, including me, by the way, they once tweeted at me from their official account that I was their favorite person, turned to during...
You love to brag about when certain food brands tweet... Corn nuts? Was it corn nuts? Or Mr. Peanut?
Mr. Peanut actually hit on me, like in a very...
that was a little awkward to observe.
Right. Mr. Peanut said he was going to, I believe, something along the lines of giving me some nut, which... Again,
check.
I got sorry, already taken. Anyways, but during pandemic lockdown, The Army, Air Force exchanges, and other retailers are having severe inventory constraints in its Hot Pocket product lines because of the outbreak. So, I mean, this is an absolute Barracks staple. Before the pandemic, it was a Barracks staple. So now only limited quantities are available and will be strictly controlled. Getting your hands on a ham and cheese Hot Pocket is now like getting a golden ticket, pretty much.
It's like going to a fucking bread line. Be like, no, only two packs.
Please, sir, can I have another, please?
More Hot Pockets, please. Or even take a lean pocket.
Yes.
A ham and cheese lean pocket for the poor, miss.
Yes, all the way into 2021, short on the Hot Pockets. And it's the only one, it's the only pockets in the military you can really sink your hands into. So that's really, that's a real bummer.
And they have a warmer sleeve, too.
A much warmer, yes, definitely. The Defense Commissary Agency was told it wouldn't be getting some varieties of the popular snacks, including lean pockets. How are we supposed to stay fit if we're out of fucking lean pockets?
This next line. Huh. This is when the libtards really take over. Kate, let them know what the next line says.
Yeah, they're out of a lot of popular snacks, like the lean pockets, said a spokesman, but it's stocking alternative Hot Pockets flavors and a similar product by Del Monte made with, if you thought the last round made you upset, cauliflower crust without meat.
Mother of God. If I see a motherfucker eating a cauliflower crusted Hot Pocket, oh, that is Firewatch like that.
It's the umbrella of foods, I would say.
It really is. Truly You're absolutely is. Right.
Several factors have caused short-term changes in availability for some products, including the stromboli-like sandwiches, whose insides become molten after 2 minutes in the microwave. Amen, don't they? Oh, my God. What a treat. So hot, we burned out a little, the Hot Pockets brand said on Wednesday on Twitter. Again, the same Twitter that I have interacted with, no big deal. We know you're missing your favorites, and we want to let you know they'll be back in the future. We're focusing on the classics now, so you can still enjoy us. The tweet didn't specify which classics would remain available.
What do you think the classics are there? I have my guess. I mean, it's obviously pepperoni.
The ham and cheese.
Ham and cheese. And then there's a cheesesteak one, the lean pockets. The cheesesteak lean pocket is...
I don't think I've ever had that one. That one sounds
Neither
disgusting.
Have I. I've never had a lean pocket, period. I've only ever had Hot Pockets. And might I also add, cauliflower crust pizza, actually
Don't,
good.
Cons.
No, disagree.
Cons.
I'm just going to say it. It is. It's not bad.
I think it's terrible. I hate all that shit. Cauliflower rice. That's not rice. You just put a fucking piece of cauliflower in a cheese grater.
Yeah, I don't believe it for a minute.
It's cauliflower. It's terrible.
I agree.
It's terrible. All right, we're going to do a little snake draft of if you can't have a Hot Pocket. So a Hot Pocket can't be one of the answers. So we're going to do a snake draft of the top four of the Barracks treats. First up, we're going to start with you, Kyle. What's your first one? Number one overall pick.
Can I go with this? I feel like I might be breaking a Hot Pocket. Duh.
No, I just said you can't
you
go.
Said,
that was the rule number one. That was the only rule.
I wasn't listening. That's not my fault.
Oh, okay. That's
Pizza rolls. Pizza rolls.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah.
It's good choice. It's a good choice.
And the correct way is to bite off all four corners and then slowly squeeze the innards into your mouth and then finish it.
Disagree. We had the first Super Bowl that I went to with Barstool. It was sponsored by Totino's Pizza Rolls. And by the time we were done with that week, I don't think I had any flesh remaining on the roof of my mouth because I just pop them in so fast after they're out of the oven and the lava explodes down the back of your mouth. I think I had like third degree burns by the end of the week. It was terrible. Mm-hmm. Cons, what do you got for pick number two?
All right, pick number two, I got mac and cheese.
I thought he was going to say charcuterie board. But what kind of Easy Mac? Are you talking Easy Mac?
Yeah, Easy Mac, yeah.
Dumpster fire, Easy Mac. All right, fair enough.
Kate?
Chef Boyardee spaghetti and meatballs in the microwavable cup.
So this is a really easy round for Kate because it's like, what do I eat?
This is
literally everything that I'm about to mention I do have here, and that's not a joke.
All right, my first one, chicken pot pie. If you're microwaving a chicken pot pie, I enjoy that.
Wow.
That's a great choice. It's a little bit of a higher delicacy as far as Barracks food goes, but good choice nonetheless.
You can cook it in a microwave, so it counts.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, no, you're right.
All right, and so since I was last, I get to go again. My next one is going to be Bagel Bites. This is where I'm
Damn it.
Overrated. I'm going to say Bagel Bites are one of the worst snacks that we have as a country.
That's
Jeez, Kate. Right, Kate, you're up next. What do you got?
The bagels are always stale and they never put enough topping on it. There, I said it. Wow. Yeah. tough, harsh. My next one would be microwave nachos, meaning I would make these for the guys on football Sundays, and
you're like fucking Napoleon Dynamite.
Our armor Ramon called them white lady nachos. He said I made white lady nachos that were unacceptable, but people still ate them.
That's not a compliment.
I would buy a can of refried beans. I just slap them on my nachos. I just dump cheese on top of them. I'd nuke them in the microwave. The chips would then be very soft, but if you were not too worried about that, you dump Ortega sauce all over them. Pretty good.
My most intense throw up in my life happened from refried beans. I was tequila drunk. And I, you know, whenever you get to a certain level where you're not like blacked out, but you're like browned out a little bit, and you know you need to eat something before you go to sleep. I had an entire can of just refried beans and tortilla chips. And the next morning when I threw up, it was like back in can form. It was unbelievable. It was back in like a long sausage form again. It was incredible.
You know, if you pop the top off a can of refried beans and put it on top of your burner on your stove and you turn the burner on, it slowly rises out of the can in the perfect can shape. Just a fun little.
All right, to know.
So, next up is cons.
Just quickly, Chaps, just to go back very quickly to your first choice there for a
chicken pot pie.
Chicken pot pie. Sorry, there's a person that I live with who one of their moves is when they come home late from the bar, very very intoxicated, is to fire up chicken pot pie. That usually only happens though if we're at my parents' house because we don't carry them in our house. But anyway,
you should.
Yeah, we should. We should start. I'm going to go Campbell's Chunky Soup. No free ads.
How many? You got to eat like 3 cans, though, for it to even wet your whistle.
That's fair. That's
like
fair.
Like 1 can of Chunky Soup, that ain't shit.
Yeah, but I feel like you get a case for like, what could it cost, Michael? Like $12?
Yeah, not much. Not much at all. Kyle, what do you got?
Going to go with Jimmy Dean sausage sandwiches. With the biscuit.
Ooh. Oh, going breakfast. I like that.
Breakfast is good all times of the day.
Mm-hmm. That actually might be one of the best answers that you could possibly have in here. That's a Rolls Royce of answers.
That really
Thank
is,
you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
And then
next up,
I got.
No,
I go again.
No, Kyle goes twice.
I go again.
Kyle goes again. Yeah.
All right. Pulling out one out of the archives here. Really special. I'm surprised I hadn't been taken yet. Lumberdogs, a Philly
yes.
special.
Oh, Lumberdogs.
Philadelphia Lumberdogs.
Had to go with my favorite hot dog concoction, Lumberdogs.
It's Philly. For there those who don't know, a Philly Lumberdog is like a Hawaiian roll with you chop up hot dogs like Lincoln Logs. And
wait, is that a new development that it's the Hawaiian roll?
It's that kind of super cheap. You're not doing it on a nice roll.
Oh, like, we don't call Hawaiian rolls cheap. That's like the Rolls Royce of fucking
sorry,
bread.
I'm thinking about potato bread.
Even still.
Anyway, you chop up the hot dogs like Lincoln Logs and you build a sort of little cabin on the bread. You cover it in warm, lukewarm macaroni salad, mayonnaise, ketchup, mustard. Bam. Philadelphia treat yep.
And then you cry.
More mayonnaise.
And then you cry. Who's cry while
who's
you eat
next,
it.
Kate?
Yeah, cons. Mine's... Oh, cons.
Cons.
All right. I'm going to go peanut butter and jelly.
Okay.
All right, so fancy making sandwiches in the Philly Lumberdogs.
I have peanut butter and jelly on my list, but I went with toasted peanut butter and jelly with crunchy peanut butter and plain Lay's chips in the middle.
Mm.
Okay. And wash it all down with a glass of OJ, as I'm sure you would.
For sure. Or chocolate milk.
Yeah, okay.
Kate?
Jameson. Okay. Sometimes we just said, fuck it, we're not eating tonight, and then we black out.
That's appropriate.
All right. My next one, and this one it's for two reasons. One, because they're delicious, and two, because if you want to have some time by yourself or you don't have a bunch of other pals in your barracks room, I went with fish sticks.
Oh,
okay.
All right.
Get the fuck out. Get out of here with that gross ass shit. If you ever find yourself eating fish in your barracks room,
yeah,
you need to get out.
I'm going to take Chaps aside on this one. I like that pick. It's a sleeper pick.
Not. I got to tell you,
everybody's pissed. They're like, what the fuck is that smell? Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's a selfish move. That's selfish.
As if the barracks don't smell bad already. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As someone who ate almost exclusively tuna out of a can during a deployment, I kind of can't really hate that ultimately.
Oh.
Yeah. And my last one is going to be Hormel beef stew is where I'm going to go.
Okay.
Jesus Christ.
All right.
Is it me? Am
back
I
to you, Kate. Yeah, it's for you, your Kate. Last choice.
It's you.
Back to me. We're not allowed to say delivery, are we?
No.
Okay, no, so
no
Domino's.
You have to
Domino's.
Cook it in your barracks.
Okay, I have to cook at my barracks. Thinking of me, I was a huge pudding pack person. Yeah, I ate a lot of pudding packs back in the day. And anything, if I had Oreos.
Kate's breaking the rules. Jameson and pudding.
Yeah. Did you see her? All she did was look at her shelf. I think her, like, yeah. She just looked at her house.
I'm surprised she didn't say lamp.
floor. Yeah, no, definitely. I would say anything, I would get pudding. And then I would create my own, like, anything you have can be dipped in pudding. Even, like, Cheetos and chips and stuff like that, so.
Fish sticks.
Yeah, it's kind of a good.
Cheetos and pudding.
It's a good lubricant. Pudding is the lubricant for food.
Okay.
You're losing this.
God.
It is. Salty and sweet. Never heard of it.
Stop. Stop.
Okay. Fish sticks.
For my last choice, I'm going to go with cold cuts.
That's good. Yeah, that'll work.
Okay.
Kyle?
Last pick, a big old hungry man, Salisbury steak microwave meal.
You can't beat it. You're going to go turkey. Something about that fake turkey and a hungry man just slaps a little. You throw some of that on like a biscuit.
Yes.
And as a final dessert option for our friends in the barracks still, how about a fluffernutter?
Ooh.
Have a little bit of marshmallow fluff, some chocolate chips, and a little bit of peanut butter on toasted bread,
see,
and then kiss it in the microwave for 12 seconds.
As a woman, had I done that, I would have never, they would have only ever seen me as a mom from then on out. they would have been lining up at my door every time they scraped their knee or something, hoping for a fluffernutter.
What do we have for dinner tonight? Is it another Jameson and pudding night?
Yeah, but with some fluffernutter too, boys. Go out by the smoke pit. I'll be right out. Bring the Kool-Aid. That's
how we survive in the barracks for round number 6. We're going to teach you how to survive with a little thing called Battle Box. Here's that interview. Now here on Zero Block 30, we have the stars of Netflix Southern Survival, which is unbelievable. I think that these guys are absolutely incredible with what they're doing. And the background that they have, you're going to see it on the social clips, is by far, we've had this, I think, 302 episodes, the best one. It's so good. They have such cool, like, tactical vehicles that you could tell they can actually go in the mud, that I had to ask them. I was like, is that fake? And nope, sure enough, Brandon went down and he ran through their garage there, their workshop there, and here he goes again. It is absolutely incredible. They got the COVID vehicle. It looks great.
We thought it was a fake Zoom background. Yeah, no, the stars of Southern Survival are absolutely crushing it. If you want to know how to escape a fire, hurricane, vacation survival, disaster striking, these are your guys. And they're also blowing shit up and messing with weapons and having all sorts of fun stuff that I'm quite frankly pretty jealous of. So Daniel Dabbs and Brian Curran, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Brandon,
fuck me. I'm sorry. I'm already nailing it. Brandon Curran.
It goes by Curran 1776.
Yeah, you can call me Curran 1776, and I'll respond every time.
Okay.
So we have a little bit. I wanted to ask you guys, first of all, doing the battle box and being in the Survivor game right now has got to be like being in the San Francisco area in 1849, where you guys just basically struck the survival gold. How fortunate were you to have your company set up at this time?
I guess just very fortunate, man. I mean, these things happen on occasion. I mean, we've been preaching for 6 years now since I started the company how important it is to be prepared. And I think people are finally really listening, of course, because 2020 has really kind of opened people's eyes as to what that means from a pandemic, epidemic standpoint, as well as the wildfires out west that are happening right now. And of course, we're right in the midst of hurricane season. So Brandon and I talk about this regularly. We do, of course, our own live feeds and instructional videos. And, we really just try to get our customers and non-customers really thinking about what it means to be prepared. And, That doesn't mean that we run around with tinfoil hats. We do have a large, you know, Battle Box Ranch here is a pretty large property. We don't have bunkers buried underground. It'd be really cool, but
not that you'll tell us about it.
We just ain't telling you about it. Yeah, we're not, right. We're not telling you everything.
Yeah, you know, but I think, you know, some of the previous series that were, you know, on TV and stuff like that probably gave a negative connotation to the prepper industry. And I guess Brandon and I fall into that. Naturally, we don't think that we're weirdos with tinfoil hats. We just really want to inspire people first and foremost to think about prepping. And second to that is just to really inspire people to want to get outdoors again. And I think people are kind of discovering what that means to get outside and explore, because everybody just kind of got bored sitting around doing Zoom calls and stuff for 2020, you know.
So I mean, the key to survival is to have fun with it, you know. Anything that you can have fun with, you tend to do it, right? So prepping and getting into survival space can be fun. It doesn't have to be doom and gloom, right? It's all about being prepared.
What's the point in surviving if you're not having a good time? You know, what's the exactly. point? But
so you've been doing,
Well, you've been doing Battle Box for 5 years now. It's grossed over 100 million over that time, and 1 million subscribers. Was this something you two were always longtime friends, and then you started doing this, and then Netflix found you and reached out? Or how did this all come about?
It's kind of a long story. I'll try to put it in a Georgia peanut shell here.
So have you ever heard of like farmersonly.com?
Yes. Oh, yes. I've signed a few friends up for it.
That's where we kicked it off.
Not at all.
Love it. I'm just
So basically, I've always been an outdoor kind of guy. You know, I grew up hunting and fishing and camping and doing all that. And I grew up through that with my friends in high school and things like that. So I started a YouTube channel after doing some filming for a few years, just to have fun, kind of be myself, let my hair down, so to speak. And while I was building my YouTube channel, I actually saw an ad about Battle Box on Instagram. I believe it was on there, or maybe it was a post, not technically an ad. But anyway, I thought it was really cool. So I've actually been on both sides of the fence, as a consumer and now as an employee. So I started doing Battle Box reviews on my YouTube channel, and talked to Daniel on occasion. And over the course of about 23 months or whatever, we really kind of hit it off as friends. We really he enjoyed my content. I enjoyed his product, obviously. And it just blossomed from there. I kind of inadvertently became the face of the company. They started using my videos on their website. People started associating me with Battle Box and vice versa. And he ended up calling me one day. He's like, "Look, dude, I need you to move down to Georgia. You want a job?" I was like, "Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was turning, I've turned wrenches for 24 years. Yeah.
Come blow things up with me. Yeah.
Yeah. Come down here and let's do this together, you know?" And, and man, Daniel's got a great team, had a great team from the beginning with his partners and all. And I just felt like it was a great opportunity for me. And I wanted to be part of something big and help grow Battle Box. And, just over time, shooting videos, content with Daniel, having fun, putting out a great product. We got noticed by some talent scouts and finding our content, and the ball started rolling. About a 3-year process.
And Brandon, what about you? Like, when we have astronauts on the show, we ask them what their backgrounds is, and they say like test pilot and things like that. Starting something like Battle Box, what's your background in order to start something like that?
Well, actually, I was in a different industry, in the screen printing industry. It was another company that I owned when I actually launched Battle Box. And really, the idea came from just noticing a trend in the subscription box space several years ago, and seeing a box sitting on the counter at home. It was like a Birch Box or something, like a makeup box that was, you know, $10 a month sample subscription. And you know, immediately, you know, my wheels kind of started turning, and I was like, well, what would a box for me look like? What would a box for people like me look like? And, you know, that's kind of started with the Knife of the Month Club, and, sort of
developed from that. I mean, I just sat down with a notepad and, you know, of course I grew up doing Boy Scouts. And of course, back in the '80s, you know, we'd stay outside, all day long and ride bikes and stay in the woods.
We didn't have cell phones.
Yeah. We didn't have cell phones. Yeah. So we were always outside building forts and like drawing maps and using pocket knives and things like that. Of course, growing up hunting, just like Brandon mentioned, I mean, heck, that's where I remember learning how to drive a stick shift was out on the hunting property, you know? And so, so we've always been into the outdoors, and I think it's just a really good positive message, of course, in 2020. And for the future, you know, Brandon used to be a part of an organization called Passing It On Outdoors. And we, sort of mimic that a little bit here, taking note that, you know, if we don't teach, children and youth these skills, then eventually they'll be lost to time because, you know, they just, all they know is doing this all day, right? Mm-hmm. Just typing with their thumbs. And, if you really kind of sit down and think about what the future looks like in 20 or 30 years, if you don't get people involved in this kind of stuff, it's actually pretty sad to think like technology is just completely taking over. And, it's really good. The plus side of things out of all of this kind of negative stuff that's happened for 2020 is I think that, that's really happening right now. People are, you know, you go down to the local store and kayaks aren't on the shelf at all.
Yeah.
You know, emergency food and camping equipment, stuff like that. You can't find any of that.
Right? Dehydrated peas.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny to see that's the aftermath of what's happened with this pandemic is like, great. People are getting outside again. I drove by a basketball court that I've never seen anybody on in years. And it was packed full of like 50 guys playing basketball. And
my kids ride their damn bikes throughout the neighborhood.
Which is new. Like, no more tech.
They're like, we're going outside to ride our bike, play with a friend. I'm like, you're doing what?
What happened? Is the PS4 broke? Do I need to get another one?
Is the Wi-Fi down? I need that fucker for work too, man.
Exactly.
And Brandon, you said that you turned wrenches for 24 years. I spent 10 years in the Marine Corps, never used a circular saw in my life until the pandemic and quarantine struck. Started doing it, and now I've gotten better, like where I'm making my own axes and doing stuff like that over the course of time. Awesome. You have somebody that was like me, just a straight up knucklehead, but doesn't know anything about survival techniques. What's their circular saw where you're starting them off from scratch?
Starting them off from scratch would be just some basics like understanding food, water, shelter, and being able to source fire. Those four things, if you've got a pretty good grasp of that, you're starting off on the right foot. I mean, obviously we need water to survive. I mean, if we don't have water,
that's true.
Be able to purify water and stuff like that. And I'm not talking about having, you know, a DeSanti bottle with you all the time. Like what if you actually had to source water? Like, how do you know you're getting water that's not going to make you sick?
You just gotta find a V-shaped long stick and walk with it until it goes into the ground.
But you know, how to purify water? Well, to do that, you gotta know how to make fire. You know, what if you don't have matches? What if you don't have a lighter? Do you know how to make fire? Building a shelter, you need to have something to cover yourself and keep yourself warm and things like that. And then obviously food. We can go a little bit longer without food than most people think. Yeah. Water, not so much.
I bet, you know, watching Southern Survival with your kids and then going on a hike with them with the battle box and shit, like seeing like, all right, we watched the show. Let's see if we can, because I'm really into hiking, but I'm not very into preparing. So I've had a couple times where I'm like, doo-doo-doo in the woods. I look up and I realize, oh, I missed whatever marker I was supposed to find. And
this side of the mountain's covered in ice.
Yeah. Or this side of the mountain's. I've once called them and was like, guys, I think I'm like really have screwed myself here, but like, I'm not prepared. And you don't know until you don't know. And all of a sudden it hits you like, oh shit, I sure wish I had prepared a little bit for whatever I've just gotten myself into.
Well, it's funny. Like what you're just talking about. We've got a video, matter of fact, dropping today with a product test that Brandon did this week, specifically on it's a spot tracker GPS and if you get into a situation where you're completely lost and can't, you know, figure out how to get home, or you've broken your leg and you can't walk, whatever it is. I mean, it is a preparedness item. You press the SOS button and the geos system of people are going to be alerted.
It's like the
Avengers. They're going to come save you, basically.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm subscribing search right now.
Yeah. Of course, sounds like you may need that.
Yeah.
I'm like, I got to use this last 1% for my Instagram story. Look at my bloody hands. Like, that's the way I roll.
Push a button and the Avengers come in and save the day for you. So, I mean, it's peace of mind. When you have peace of mind, you're out hiking and you go, oh no, I'm lost, or oh no, this is a situation I'm in. You go, oh, I'm good.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, when you can bring that stress level down because you've got an understanding of what you need to do for a certain situation, or even have a product that's going to help you, you're good.
Or you may have a compass, or you may not know how to read a compass. Those are things in the past that we've that
compass
we've touched
get
on.
You lost if you're careful.
You know,
oh yeah.
If you really get deep into the types of skills we encourage people to learn and things like that, it's how do I find direction with the sun, right? And using a stick and some shadows, and there's a whole plethora of things that we go over at BattleBox, from, like Brandon mentioned, not just the primitive stuff like starting fire, but we've sent kits before that really like car vehicle survival kits, for which everybody can relate to, right?
Yeah.
Like flat
the poor
tire on
dad
the side of the road
who takes his
stuff.
Kids to cut down the Christmas trees, and like a month later they find them in the car, like covered in newspapers, keeping warm.
Yeah.
They could have used your box. Yeah. Do you ever hear from people who reach out who are like, hey, I watched your show and I found myself in this situation? Like, do you get feedback from people who used your skills? Like, do you have a good example of somebody who's
week, I can use myself as an example. One of the products that that you see in the rescue
episode two
on the show is this little $10 tool. It's called a Rescue Me tool, and we sell them on the site, of course, and we've sold a lot of them. But I had to use it last week because I was driving down the road and came across an overturned vehicle, and there was a lady in it.
Wow!
And she couldn't get out. And so, so you use that tool, of course, to cut the seatbelt, and then, of course, to break the glass if you need to. Her glass was already broken, but I did use the seatbelt cutter tool portion of it. And yes, we get feedback like that all the time. Tourniquets we've sent have been used in real world scenarios. There's actually years and years ago, we got a email about like a shark attack on the coast. And the guy was like, yep, my wife always was wondering why I was carrying around all this BattleBox gear and why I needed this tourniquet.
Oh,
and guess who was the only
you
one
so
on the beach?
For that is just perfect.
Yeah, that's
I know.
So
right?
You said I wasted this money. You would have been eaten up by a shark, honey. Yep. You better be saying thank you.
She stopped
cool
complaining about the subscription after that.
We've even got emails and comments on videos or comments on Facebook from guys who have been getting BattleBox and the wife was like maybe not so into it to start with. Now they're getting upset because their wives are stealing some of the products that they like out of the box and using it for their own uses.
Our female demographic
is definitely
pocket
necklace that you're wearing right now. Like, I'm going to go and order one of those bad boys. But with putting these together for the last 6 years, I'm sure you guys don't have like proprietary patents and things like that for all the equipment that you put into it. I'm sure you get sent stuff like, hey, this should probably be in the BattleBox all the time. What's some of the things that you've gotten that you're like, fuck this, no way, that's not getting in our box?
Cheese.
Cheese?
I don't know. There's
another
there's
BattleBox with no cheese.
Yeah.
Right.
There's some stuff that just doesn't pass the sniff test. I mean, watching the show, of course, you see another version of that Rescue Me tool that's like a glass breaker that just fails, and you see Brandon
and apart when I was using it.
See Brandon and team like
that engineer's got to be like,
this is junk. And of course, it's not a huge surprise. It was like some cheap thing that came off of Amazon or something, if you will, which is kind of a testament to let us, don't just go to Amazon and buy all this kind of junk that claims that it's going to save your life or whatever. BattleBox, we put this stuff to the test so that you don't have to. We make sure that it works before we send it to our customers. And I don't know. I think that's the best way to do it. And then, of course, like I said, we do it in a fun way. The subscribers are always, there's a plethora of customers that are that got their own YouTube channel that kind of do their unboxings and try to kind of mimic Brandon in a way, like how he started and now he's full-time here with us here at BattleBox. You see people getting their kids involved with opening these boxes on their tables or with their families. It's just a really cool experience, I think, you know.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I've made a promise to our listeners that I'll never run again after doing 10 years in the Marines. Never. I'll never run. I want you to make a promise to our listeners, Daniel, where once you're done, once you're retired and you move on, you sell Battle Box to somebody else. I know that you said a lot of your subscribers are normal, but there's got to be that 10% that isn't. Will you promise our listeners that you will release the emails of those 10% who are not normal that you get, I'm sure?
Release the emails of the not normal people. Sure.
Yeah. I would love just to read a book of that just sitting on the toilet, and that just the book that you read, like, man, that's a wild.
Brandon and Daniel, awesome. I've been in my hut in the woods for 5 years now, and this has been working out great. My final question.
You didn't let him answer, Kay. He's gotta say yes or no.
Absolutely.
Oh, love
he's
it.
He's doing it.
How about we just make the book ourselves and then we'll send you one?
Okay, great. I mean,
we could make a pretty funny book with just kind of some of the dumb customer service questions we get at times.
But, oh, I bet people using that stuff. Give me, you know, I'm going to subscribe and I'm going to take it out in the woods and you'll get a dumb email.
I don't think that's unique to BattleBox. I think just like in general, on the internet, people just like seem to just not know how to be alive. I don't know. Like, yeah. They're just
You're Flint tool.
You need a battle box just for internet culture.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be. And final question for me. You know, you legitimately test this stuff out. Everything, like you said, it passes the sniff test. So you, and I see too, just on your own social medias, you're out in the boonies fishing and going on adventures and doing whatever. That's just the way you live your lives. Has there ever been a situation for each of you, a Kate lost in the woods situation where you have that, oh shit, I'm really about to have to rely on this stuff that I've been learning to get out of this?
I mean, I think we're all, Brandon and I are always sort of over prepared, if you will. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like he mentioned earlier, peace of mind is very important to us. Redundancy is very important to me, especially. I'm sure Brandon feels the same way. You know, we're, give you an example. Like I said, we're in the middle of hurricane season and right now the power could go out and this Zoom meeting would still run as if nothing happened. I mean, everything here is on generators. We've got excess fuel. We've got extra chainsaws for trees that go down. We've got the tractor if we need to.
You guys are big electric chainsaw guys, right?
I didn't know they made a Tesla chainsaw, but I'll try anything once, you know. We try not to find ourselves in those situations. I can't say, Kate, that it hasn't happened before. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. You know, when that incident happened,
nothing necessarily has happened to us, but we have, when Hurricane Florence came through a couple years ago up through South Carolina and into North Carolina, we were able to mobilize and go that way to help. You know, so it's not awesome. Necessarily always, how am I going to protect myself? How am I going to survive myself? Blah, 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 blah. If you've got peace of mind, if you've got the equipment, if you've got the know-how, you have the ability to help others, you know, help your neighbor and stuff like that. And just like we were talking earlier about passing on, you kind of, maybe if you go help somebody now they go, oh, well, I want to be prepared like that guy. I want to be able to pay it forward and help my neighbor. So,
and what's the, you know, Southern Survival's out on Netflix right now. There are 8 episodes people can watch and kind of learn this stuff. BattleBox is a subscription service. What's next for you guys now? What's the next big thing?
I mean, I heard astronauts earlier. Somebody
about outer space. I mean,
maybe we'll do an episode on like how to survive on the moon.
Actually, I'm still working on my long-term life goal since I was a child of becoming Magnum PI. So I'm still working on that. That's probably next.
Pretty close with those vehicles you got behind you.
Yeah, there's an evolution happening, and you know, yeah, that's where I'm going.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, always wanted to meet Magnum PI, man.
We appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah,
man. Thanks for having us. It was a great time.
Boy, speaking of, I got a real battle box now, don't I? Gonna have to.
Let's move on to save rounds and alibis. Cons, we'll start with you.
Kate, are we just gonna have to listen to bad pregnancy puns now for the next 5
absolutely.
Months?
Absolutely. Oh, for hopefully. Sure, for sure.
Yep. Just checking. Quick.
At that point, it won't be just me that's had something round rip through your body.
That's true. We'll both be there.
We're gonna have to get Kate a Purple Heart. Get that citation ready to go.
Should have ducked, potato, Kate. Potato. I should have ducked. Yeah. I should have just like a nice hot barracks
through the old window.
Nice hot barracks SpaghettiOs. I should have just blown on it. You know.
Okay. All right. Quickly.
Hotter filling than a fucking pizza.
That's true. Or in the roof of my taint.
Dip it in some pudding.
Yeah. I'm gonna give birth in a pudding pool. In a little pudding tub.
Gons, what do you got?
Do you guys combat park your car?
You mean
no.
Back in?
When I had my F-250, I did, because the turning radius whenever you're going from the front to back is awful. You are definitely going to hit somebody else, but you can turn better whenever you're like backing in. So I would then, now that I have my yellow truck, I don't.
Okay.
I have timed this out. It takes more time to back into a spot than it ever does to back out of one. Okay, you can back out of a spot. Backing into one takes more time. I would say the combat park, ultimately slower if you combine the times.
Yeah, you got to hurry up to wait to get inside.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, it's a real thing.
Okay. Yeah, just curious. Also,
wait, why are you curious? You've been combat parking your car like a nerd?
No, he's been getting made fun of by his lady friend. I know both of you guys.
You know what combat parking is? Combat parking is the same as a man who, when you go to a restaurant, he's like, I'll take that seat back to the wall so I can see what's going on in the restaurant. I'm like, okay, all right, Dad.
You did that whenever we were at Chick-fil-A.
I do. I get nervous.
Yeah, so don't shame. Don't shame.
I do combat park my car when I can find it.
I actually meant to mention this on last Friday's episode and just forgot to write it down. But anyway, I was doing a wine tasting at
the wine. It's a full-bodied red.
Through the viscosity.
Full-bodied.
Anyway, I was doing a wine tasting at the Legion because we have to decide which wines we're going to carry initially. And one of my guys was sitting there next to me. He was an E5, and he starts going on and talking, and he's saying a bunch of things, and they're just completely wrong. So finally, I'm like, Danny, just shut up and drink the wine. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Excuse my language.
Oh, got an F-bomb in the comments.
I did a little enlisted shaming there. Wow. Sorry. He's like, you're right. Sorry, sir. That's a weird thing too.
Oh, calls you sir. I'm never going to that place.
No, no. Listen, sometimes they'll slip back into their old NCO ways and they'll drop a sir. And weird. It's very weird to hear. They're very nice guys though.
Even if there's a fire, I won't.
Yeah. I need to go over there.
Start the fire in her gender reveal. I won't.
I need to go over there and someone has to disrespect you in front of them. let it be me, because they need to learn.
Careful. Are you allowed to smoke inside?
Not yet.
Oh, this baby's tough as nails. They don't care.
All right. Let's go with Kyle. What do you got?
Not a whole lot. I'm glad Kate made her announcement. That'll be fun. And that's all I got.
Yeah, Kate? I was tired of keeping that secret.
Me too. Ugh, you and me both. I can't poop. I can't sleep. I can't eat. And then when I do, it's just pudding.
Okay.
Okay.
What do you got for Sound a safe retreat?
That's it. Bye.
That's it. Bye.
Okay. Bye, guys.